Good evening. Okay. So we're in Genesis 23. And Genesis 23 is the chapter where Sarah dies. So she lived 127 years. And if you we can do a chronology based upon Abraham, because we know Abraham was 10 years older than Sarah. So based on that, they entered Canaan when Sarah was 65. Ishmael was born when Sarah was 76. Isaac is born when Sarah's 90, and now at 127, she passes away. And so she lived 37 years after the birth of Isaac. So Isaac's 37 years old. In the next chapter, Isaac's 40 years old. So 3 years go by between chapters 23 and 24. And Abraham, he's going to live another 38 years after Sarah's death. And we'll look at that when we get into chapter 25, because there's some interesting things about chapter 25. At the beginning of the chapter, when Moses writes this, Abraham dies. But we know later on, after Isaac and Rebekah have Esau and Jacob, Abraham was actually still alive during the first 15 years of Jacob and Esau. So Moses kind of kills him off at the beginning of the chapter, and he's not mentioned anymore because really he doesn't play any role after the birth of Jacob and Esau, even though he's still alive. So Sarah's 127 years old. Verse 2, she died in Kiriath Arba, which is Hebron. It's also the place where the Oaks of Mamre are. And I'm going to share some maps with you, show you where these places are. So here's a map of Canaan. And Hebron, so Jerusalem is kind of right even with the top of the Dead Sea. Hebron is just a little southwest of Jerusalem. And one interesting thing, you know, if you want to trace Abraham's steps, he actually started out in Hebron. In chapter 13, he talks about Abram moved his tent and dwelt by the oaks of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and that's where he built an altar. From Hebron, travels south into the Negev and settles in Gerar. And that's where he and Abimelech had an incident. And then from Gerar, he moves to Beersheba. And then from Beersheba, he heads up to Jerusalem with just Isaac and some servants, because that's where God wanted him to sacrifice Isaac. And then from Jerusalem, he goes back to Beersheba. And at some point between the end of chapter 22 and the beginning of chapter 23, they move back to Hebron. So they've come full circle in from chapter 13 to chapter 23. From Hebron to Gerar to Beersheba, back to Hebron. And Hebron's one of those places that you're going to find throughout the Old Testament. It's one of the places where Moses when he sent the spies. That's where they found the Anakim. It's one of the places that was defeated by Joshua. Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb. Hebron was one of the six cities of refuge. It was one of the cities that was given to the Levites. It's the city where David was actually first anointed king by the people of Judah. And he spent the first 7.5 years of his reign in Hebron. His first six sons were born in Hebron. He makes peace with Abner, Saul's general, in Hebron. Eventually, he becomes king over all of Israel in Hebron, and then eventually moves up and captures Jerusalem. And while David's in Jerusalem, his son Absalom declares himself king in Hebron. So Hebron, it plays a huge role throughout the Old Testament. And this is one of the places where you're going to see it the most here, and we're at least beginning with the death of Sarah. So Abraham, the end of verse 2, Abraham went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. She had been laid out in her tent, prepared for burial. And he goes in to mourn and weep for his wife, but now he has to find some place to bury her. It's hot down there, and you're not going to keep a body too long. So what he does is he goes to speak to the sons of Heth. And the sons of Heth would be the Hittites. And you can do a whole interesting study on the Hittites. There actually appears to be, from what I've read, two different groups of Hittites. You've got these Hittites living locally in the land of Canaan, but then you have a group of Hittites living up in what was Anatolia in Turkey, and they're very different. Most of the Hittites you're going to see in the Old Testament would be Hittites from the land of Canaan. And so Abraham, he goes to these Hittites, to the sons of Heth, and he's very respectful. And there's this huge ritual that they go through to purchase a piece of property. Normally we would go, you know, how much do you want for this land? Somebody gives a price. We might try and dicker them down a little bit, but you know, it's pretty quick. This process that they're going to go through is just long and drawn out and very complicated. So the first thing he does is he comes to the sons of Heth in the city of Hebron, and says, "I'm a stranger and a sojourner among you." So he acknowledges he's a stranger living among these Hittites. He's not a part of their people group, even though he's living in their land. And the fact of the matter, he's been living in this land for 62 years. So he says, "I'm a stranger, even though I've been here for 62 years, and I'm a sojourner. I'm just passing through. I'm not a permanent resident. And I need some place to bury my wife. I need a burial site among you that I may bury my dead out of my sight." And he's not asking for a handout. You know, he's not asking the Hittites, you know, to give him some place to bury Sarah at no cost. This is the whole beginning of this negotiating process. And the following verses are gonna point that out. So the sons of Heth answer Abraham, "Hear us, my lord. You are a mighty prince among us. Now, Abraham, by this time, was incredibly wealthy. He had, if you remember back in chapter 14, when Lot was taken captive, Abraham at that time had 318 adult males who were his servants. That doesn't include their wives. That doesn't include their children. He had 318 adult males at that time. And now we're many years later. He's probably got, you know, all told close to 1,000 people in his little camp. And he's got silver and gold, more than he knows what to do with. In the next chapter, when he sends the servant up to Haran to get a wife for Isaac, he sends 10 camels full of goods, and that's well over a ton of goods just to give away to Laban and his mother to purchase the bride price for Rebecca. So Abraham's incredibly rich. The Hittites, he's a mighty prince. He's got his own little private army. And so they continue on with this negotiating process. Bury your dead in the choicest of our graves. None of us will refuse you his grave for burying your dead. Now, it sounds like they're saying, we're going to give you whatever you want. That's not what's happening. This is all part of the negotiating process. They're not saying that they're willing to give Abraham a grave at no cost. They're simply showing how this is going to work out. And the thing to remember when they're talking about graves here, they're not talking about a hole in the ground, you know, like at a cemetery. They're actually talking about tombs, and these tombs were caves. They were either naturally formed or carved out of the rock, and they were quite rare. And let me show you some pictures. In Israel, they were building this highway. And as they were building this highway, they came across this rock outcropping that actually had tombs carved in it. And it really surprised them. So they kind of built the highway around this rock outcropping instead of tearing it down. And they left the tombs in place. Here's another one. You know, and this would be kind of what was going on, this cave of Machpelah that Abraham wants. It's kind of like this hole in this rock outcropping. Here's another one that's actually built up, you know, with an entrance. And these are actually quite rare. Normally in Israel today, You're not buried in the ground. You're buried in a crypt above the ground, and it's a ventilated crypt. So air gets in and out and bugs get in and out and you eventually turn to bones. But these caves, kind of like that as well, this one that had the stone rolled in front of it, you know, they would put their dead in there and then roll a stone in front of it to keep the wild animals out. But the bugs and worms and whatnot could come and go as they please. And that's what Abraham is looking for. I need a tomb, a cave to put Sarah. And I know of one, and it's at the end of this field that belongs to Ephron. And that's the one he wants. He wants Ephron's cave. And The Hittites, they're saying, yeah, none of us are going to refuse you his his burial place. You know, you can have it. And so Abraham rises and approaches a little bit closer, and he bows to the people of the land, the sons of Heth. And you got to picture this. He's starting off at, you know, with some distance between himself and the Hittites. And he makes his request. They respond. He comes a little closer, bows down to the ground, speaks to them again. He says, verse 8, if it's your wish for me to bury my dead out of my sight, hear me and approach Ephron, the son of Zohar, for me. Now, Ephron was sitting there, and Abraham knew that, but you didn't approach the person you wanted to negotiate with. You approached the people, and the people would be the witnesses before you ever got to talk to the individual. So approach Ephron that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he owns, which is at the end of his field. Now, I want you to notice that Abraham doesn't want to buy the field. He just wants the cave. That he may give me the cave which he owns, which is at the end of his field. I don't want the field. I just want the cave. What am I going to do with a field? I just want some place to bury Sarah. And he says, I'm willing to pay the full price. Let him, you know, for the full price, let him give it to me in your presence for a burial site. So when you negotiated these things, you didn't negotiate it one-on-one. You negotiated it in the presence of a group of people. They're going to be the witnesses. And Abraham, he approaches the Hittites, speak to Ephron. Ephron's sitting right there. I'm willing to give the full price for the cave. And, you know, David does the same thing when he, in 1 Chronicles 21 with Ornan, you know, I'm willing to give you the full price for the threshing floor. And Ornan says, oh, no, take it for yourself. And here's the oxen and the threshing sledges and the wheat. I give it all to you. And David says, no, I'm going to pay you the full price. And Abraham does the same thing. I'm going to pay the full price, but we've got to determine the full price. And that's what this whole long drawn out process is. So Ephron is sitting among the sons of Heth, and he answered Abraham in the hearing of the sons of Heth. So everyone can hear what's going on. All who went in at the gate of the city. Now, city gates. This is where business was conducted. This is where judicial decisions were made. If you had a grievance with some person, you would take them to court at the city gate. If you wanted to talk to a ruler, you'd talk to the ruler at the city gate. And let me show you some pictures. This is Megiddo. And this structure down here in the lower right, that's the city gate. And it's quite large. And here's another picture of it. The city gate, you go in through this, and it's very narrow. And the reason it's so narrow is because you don't want an enemy army marching in 10 across. You want maybe two or three coming in at a time. And these city gates had these little alcoves on the side. And this is where people would sit. This is where the sons of Heth are sitting. This is where the judges would sit. This is where the princes would sit. And here's some of the ruins. Here's one of those little alcoves. And people would congregate here. And decisions would be made, negotiations would be made, payments would be made. Here's another one. you could probably get 4 or 5 people in here. And, you know, they're opposite one another. So the Hittites would be sitting in these alcoves, and Abraham is approaching them and talking to the different groups. Here you can see out onto the plain, and here's one of the alcoves. There's another one. Here you can see them sitting across from one another. There's the tombs again. So Abraham, the Hittites, they're sitting in the gate, and Ephron says, well, Abraham says, "Hear me." And Ephron responds, "No, my Lord, hear me. I will give you the field and I give you the cave." And right there, Ephron kind of makes it clear the two are going together. You can't have the field, or you can't have the cave without the field. "I'll give you the field and I'll give you the cave in the presence of the sons of my people. I give it to you, bury your dead." And again, this is part of the whole negotiating process. Ephron isn't really willing to give away his field or the cave. He wants to sell it, but the whole process, it just long and drawn out, like, just name a price. So Abraham, he bows down again, comes a little bit closer before the people of the land, and he speaks now directly to Ephron. Up to this point, he's been negotiating with the rest of the clan. Now he's talking directly to Ephron, and he says, "If you will only please listen to me, I'll give you the price of the field. Okay, I only want the cave, but since you're not willing to give me the cave without the field, I'll give you the price of the field. Accept it from me that I may bury my dead. I'm willing to pay for it. No problem." So Ephron, and this is where the price is set, and it's kind of offhanded. "My Lord, what's a piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver? What's that between you and me? Bury your dead." Okay, why couldn't he have just said that from the beginning? You know, we have to start out with this whole process, talking to the people and then talking about Ephron in front of the people and finally talking to Ephron. And then finally he says, "A piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver. What's that between friends? Bury your dead." And notice there's no negotiating after that. Once Ephron sets the price, that's it. There was no, "Yeah, that seems kind of steep to me. How about 200 shekels? And Ephron would come back, "Nah, 300. How about 250? How about 275? Sold. Now, once he sets 400 shekels, that's it. There's no negotiating after that. And I think Ephron kind of realized the urgency of the situation. You know, Sarah's probably been dead for a few days and time is of the essence. And he kind of has Abraham over the barrel, and Abraham would be rather foolish to reject that offer. So Abraham listens to Ephron and weighed out for Ephron the silver, which he had named in the hearing of the sons of Heth, 400 shekels of silver. Now, for Abraham, that is kind of chump change, because remember back when he had lied about Sarah, and when Sarah was vindicated, Abraham got 1,000 pieces of silver. So, okay. But I mean, Abraham was so wealthy, he really didn't need that. Now, couple things about the 400 shekels. Notice he doesn't count out 400 shekels. He weighs out 400 shekels. In the ancient Middle East, the shekel was actually a unit of weight. And it was roughly about 4.39 ounces. Commercial standard. I like the way Moses adds that. This is commercial standard. So 400 shekels would be about 9 3/4 pounds of silver. So he weighs out the 400 shekels. You need to distinguish when they're talking about weighing out silver from pieces of silver. So there are lots of references in the Old Testament where they're weighing out a certain amount of money. For example, in the next chapter, when Abraham's servant gives Rebecca the nose ring and the bracelets, the nose ring weighed half a shekel of gold and the bracelets weighed 10 shekels. Absalom's hair, for example, weighed 200 shekels. The gold that David gave to Ornan weighed 600 shekels. So you had monetary units by weight, but you also had coins. So you'll find references in the Old Testament where it talks about pieces of silver. And when Sarah was vindicated, Abraham got 1,000 pieces of silver. Jacob bought the field from Hamor and Shechem for 100 pieces of money. And what seems to be going on here is sometimes the pieces were bigger or smaller. And so in order to get an exact measurement, you take all the pieces and weigh them. And so 1,000 pieces might only weigh 400 shekels. So Ephron wants an exact amount. I don't want just pieces of silver that weigh varying amounts. I want 400 shekels weight of silver. So Abraham weighs out 400 shekels of silver, gives it to Ephron. And so verse 17, Ephron's field, which was in Machpelah, which faced Mamre, the field and the cave, and all the trees that were within all the confines of its border were deeded over to Abraham. And I kind of like that. It's kind of what goes on out here out west. When you buy a piece of property, especially out in the country, you better make sure you have two things. You have the water rights to that property, and you have the mineral rights to that property. Otherwise, you're just buying surface ground. So if I were to buy 1,000 acres of land out in the country, if I'm not making clear I want the mineral rights for everything underneath that property, and I want the water rights for anything, you know, flowing from that property, I'm really not getting that. All I'm buying is surface dirt. And that's exactly what's going on here. When Abraham bought this land, it included all the trees. Otherwise, Ephron could have said, hey, I just sold you the field. I didn't sell you what was in the field. But he makes it clear it's the field, it's the cave, it's the trees, and it's everything within the border. I'm buying the works. So no one can come back later and say, hey, the trees are mine. Everything goes over to Abraham. And so he gets it for possession in the presence of the sons of Heth before all who went in at the gate of his city. And so all of these people are now witnesses. and the property was deeded over to Abraham, and these people would have signed the deed. So there was actually a written contract. Abraham just bought the field within these boundaries. He bought the cave at the end. He bought all of the trees, and he bought everything within the confines. And then all of these witnesses would sign their names, and the deed would, Abraham would get a copy of the deed, and, you know, who's ever in charge of the city, or Ephraim would have gotten a copy, you know, probably the others would have gotten a copy. So no one can come back later and say, this land doesn't belong to Abraham. You just pull out the deed and say, yeah, it does. Here's all the witnesses. Something very similar to this went on with Jeremiah. In Jeremiah 32, Jeremiah was told he needed to buy the field that belonged to his uncle. And so he does this. And in verse 12, he says he gave the deed of purchase to Baruch in the sight of Hanamel, my uncle's son, and in the sight of the witnesses who signed the deed of purchase. So all these guys that are in the gate, they signed their names. This belongs to Abraham. Doesn't belong to Ephron anymore. So after this, Sarah or Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field at Machpelah, facing Mamre, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. So once he got the cave, he's now able to bury his wife. And again, Moses reiterates it. The field and the cave were deeded over to Abraham for a burial site by the sons of Heth. And it's not just going to be for Sarah. This is now, in fact, this is the only possession that technically belonged to Abraham in the land of Canaan. You know, he's even though the entire country belonged to him, this is the only possession really that he has. He's a wanderer. Isaac's going to be a wanderer. Jacob's going to be a wanderer. It's not until the Exodus that Israel actually takes possession of the land. And so Abraham, he lives around 2000 BC. It's not going to be for another 600 years before the descendants of Abraham actually take possession of the land. And Abraham's only possession is a field and a cave. And later on in chapter 25, Abraham's going to be buried there. In chapter 35, Isaac's going to be buried there. In chapter 47, Jacob's going to be buried there. Or, yeah, well, that's where chapter 50 is where he gets buried. He makes his kids promise that. And Rebekah and Leah also get buried there. So there's Sarah and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Rebecca and Leah. So there's six people that are going to be buried in that cave. And that's their only possession until 600 years later. Any questions?
Jeff, you talk like you've been there.
Well, I haven't been to the cave. That would be kind of cool.
Have you been to Hebron?
No, I never got that far south.
Dave?
I haven't either. At the time, I was part of the, probably still is in the West Bank area, and they didn't allow anybody down there.
Yeah, about the farthest south, you can get to Masada. But you know, some of the cities, they're not going to let you in.
That's right. That's right.
So in 1987, if I can just tell a story, we rented a car, an SUV, I think it was. My son and Alex were there. Fred would have been 14. Alex was 10 or 11. And Ruth and I, and we wanted to go to Masada and the Dead Sea and do all that. So we drove down the hill and I'm a bit younger and more adventurous. And so on the way home, I said, well, let's go the other way around and go home the other way. Well, we were getting thirsty about the time we got to Hebron. And so we went into this sort of, what's the guy's name? Peter Lorre type populated bar in or restaurant in Hebron. And I'm looking around for the knives to see what. And so we sat at this table and I sat with my back to the wall, kind of like that. So it was a good thing the kids were there. Or actually, we would have been knifed to death. Yeah. I was going to ask him where the Cave of Machpelah was, but I just settled with it for a Coke, for a Coke and a piece of potato chips, bag of chips.
That's right. What is Tejans and the other's her name?
Yeah.
You're muted. Dave, you're muted. There you go.
Am I still?
Nope, you're good.
Okay. Could Bojana contribute anything on the Hittites since she teaches about them at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee? I don't know if she's on tonight. Yeah, she is. I mean, were they originally, Joanne and I have been through Hittite country up in Turkey. Very fascinating place. One of these Sundays, I'm going to show you a large photograph of what we saw up there in the Hittite country. But were they originally up there just in Turkey, Anatolia, and then some moved down to
Egypt, all that? I've read several conflicting things like that. Some of them said that they were originally up there, and then they began in Hattusa, I think.
Yeah.
And 2500 BC, and that empire fell apart, and then there was an old kingdom and a new kingdom, and some of them migrated. I've read, that there were actually two different groups, one in Anatolia and one in Canaan, and they weren't related except through Hath. Mm. So I don't know.
I see. It seems like they were up in what we would call Syria today also. There was a group of them up there.
Yeah, there was, from what I've read, when they expanded in from Anatolia into northern Syria. Mm. But even then, things that I've read, I've read that they were still distinct from the Canaanite group.
I see.
So I don't know. I'm not an expert on that.
Thank you.
Oh, do you want to comment on the Hittites? Maybe you're away when we were talking about that.
Well, that it's a historical fact that the Hittites and Israelites, they at that time, they were in contact with each other. So it's a proven fact even after the fall of the Hittite Empire, which is around, 1000 BCE, all the Hittites moved down to northern Syria and also Levant, the territories along the Mediterranean Sea. And then still, to some degree, the language, the Hittite language was spoken. And so, yeah, definitely. I mean, these are historical facts, and the way, you know, the contracts at the gates have been prominent. I mean, they have been, not the contacts, but the judicial settings and, you know, signing contracts and everything was done pretty much at the gates. So in many ancient and societies, actually, there were even festivals before Christianity. There were festivals to protective pagan deities that were supposed to protect the gates. So you see that, and it's very, very interesting.
Yep. But I wondered, Jeff or Dave, is there any hint about where Machpelah is? Or are they doing any archaeological scrounging around in that area? That
I have no idea.
Not up on the archaeological digs of now and of recent years.
Yeah, you know, I would think that given it's part of Palestinian territory, probably not.
Yeah. But the kids seem to like caves, you know, up near, it's south of Hattusa, but there are a number of areas where when marauding armies would come through, they were able to hide themselves either in caves or in below ground. They had extensive cities below ground. And on the first level, they had their animals and their feed. And then down below, they lived with air pipes that went up, you know, and extensive, very extensive.
That's interesting.
Jeff, I have a question for you. In Ezekiel 40 through 48, where the temple is described, there are some really interesting, some Bible teachers have put together 3D images of what they would look like and such, but the gates that are described, the 12 gates, have kind of these alcoves in them. And I thought it was interesting that just like the gates that you had in the little pictures, I just think it's so interesting that the designs of these things, the thought that went into them. And I don't know if you ever think there's any connection there. I suppose it's, you know,
I would imagine that the city gates, you know, for, you know, the temple and even the New Jerusalem in eternity would probably be quite similar to this type of thing.
That's interesting.
During the millennium, you know, there's still going to be buying and selling and negotiating and all of that stuff going on. So why not?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It is.
Well, it just seems that this is such a an important thing, really, where they bought a parcel of land and have a claim to that property through their descendants and all that over these 3-4,000 years that you're saying, Jeff, and
yeah.
And then to have it remarked that the patriarchs and their wives are all buried there,
mm-hmm.
And yet I'm sorry, I'm doing a little thing here. Rachel, Dave, I'm sure you've seen Rachel's tomb there in Bethlehem area.
No.
Huh?
I haven't had that privilege.
Oh yeah, there's a little I don't know, preserved building that they claim is Rachel's tomb. We can't get in it, but it's It's Rachel's tomb, where, you know, where she died along the way just before they got back to Bethlehem.
Yeah, I kind of think it's probably not Rachel's tomb.
Well, be optimistic.
A nice tourist area, but
yeah. Yeah. Probably. Anyway, yeah, I still stand by my thing about Hebron being, as you pointed out, such an important city in early Jewish history.
Yeah.
With Caleb coming there and claiming, didn't he claim that area as his heritage?
Yep. Yes, he did.
Yeah, and that was the southernmost city of refuge.
Mm.
127 years old.
Yes.
So, Fred, when you went there, had it been developed around Abraham's tomb, or what they think is Abraham's tomb? I've seen some pictures. It was quite developed around there.
You're talking Rachel's tomb or Abraham?
Abraham.
Well, that was my question. Have they identified where Abraham, where this cave of Machpelah is? I don't know. All I know is I wanted to get a Coke and a bag of chips and times four and get out of there before Peter Lorre stuck a knife in my back. No kidding. I was a little scared.
Yeah, I should add that when we got back to Jerusalem, people were absolutely aghast that we'd been driving all over the place with this man here, not worrying about it.
Well, now I think if you rent a car, you're not allowed to take it.
You can't.
Territory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I heard.
No.
Somebody, let me know you're here. Wave your hand. Let me know you can hear me. Okay. I'm really impressed. I've never been to the Holy Land. I'm really impressed by all of you have gone and looked at these portions and enjoyed them. Fred, but I would mention that Peter Lorre was in Rick's Cafe.
Yeah.
But that was the one you looked at. And I've never been there. And the other thing is, while I've never been to the Holy Land, and seen this, I bet none of you have driven from Bucaramanga over the high up Andes Mountain to Malaga. So there. Okay.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
That'd be scarier. No. It's just the way it happened.